I think today's going to be fun. The topic is hot. This is our banter number 8 from the last count. And of course, our last banter. Let's have a look at it. Pretty well received. Have a look at this. Oh my goodness.
In Singapore.
What do you feel are you wrong about this last episode?
Like a politician here. But
what do I feel? I mean, like, it is our highest view count.
Were you happy that Mr. Crunchy was here?
I like guests.
Yeah, we're going to have a next guest next week. So next week, we're going to have Mr. Eugene, the co-founder of The Assembly Place. We're going to talk about rental market, co-living, and of course...
Oh my God, co-living. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, we're going to talk about co-living. We're going to talk about the whole rental situation. Of course, the sprout of all this new kind of business model in Singapore as well as worldwide. And of course, for today, we have two new teammates that is with us. So, Yurong, take it away. Let's introduce Bukele and Bengyu. Come.
So today, we're going to introduce our two teammates from our inside sales team. We have the joyful Mikaela.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Hi.
And we have our woman 的朋友 Ong Bengyu.
What do you call him, woman 的朋友? What is it?
Bengyu and 朋友, it rhymes. So,
Bengyu. This is the longest running joke.
Oh, Bengyu, huh?
20 over years ago. And now he's still using it.
Oh, as in like Bengyu.
Bengyu.
Ah, and then Bengyu. Is that it?
Yes, because Yi-Rong is also my brother. That's why he knows about this.
Yeah.
Ong Yi-Rong.
I use it through my own creativity. I was thinking about it last night on how to introduce you.
Mikaela, give us an introduction about yourself. What do you do in the past? And of course, Mikaela has one of the... which camera should I look at? This camera. Which one?
I'm assuming that. Then you don't have to stretch your head.
Sure. So, Mikaela has one of the best pronunciation...
Is that what I'm known for? Just the best pronunciation.
No, her English has been by far one of the most impressive and
Mandarin as well.
Most rich in terms of tonality. So give us an introduction on how do you get to this level of English capability?
Pure raw talent.
Just watch more TV and then learn from what you see on TV. For real though, that's how I kind of...
What TV
I feel like
do you watch?
Asked me this question before.
What TV do you watch?
As a child, I had free reign over whatever I wanted to watch. I could watch anything from Nickelodeon to Disney Channel to Cartoon Network. So yeah, you just pick up naturally while watching TV.
How long do you spend on the TV every day?
I don't know. I'm not counting.
At what age was that like?
I don't know. Maybe when I was in preschool? No, it's funny because if you have children or you've seen children who watch Peppa Pig, and Peppa Pig is a British show, right?
Right.
You will hear the little children speaking in a British accent too. Right. So when they introduce the characters, for example, one of the piggies' name is George.
Right.
They don't say, this is George. They say, it's George, like that.
Okay, so may I ask, like, you realize this, like tonality, your accent, right? That's what those from the television that you watch in the past. Is it because like you and your sibling speak very differently?
No, because I think I've been questioned a lot in my life. Like, why do I speak the way that I speak?
Yeah, because when I met you for the first time, I thought that you just came back from overseas or something like that.
No, born and raised in Singapore.
Studied in Singapore?
Yeah.
Right, fantastic.
So I guess, you know, it took some time to reflect, and I think ultimately it was... I can only attribute it to the fact that I watched a lot of TV as a child.
Fantastic. Yeah, I watched Michaela's home tour. Very interesting because her tonality is different. So, very interesting. I'm like watching a... What is that?
Keeping Up the Kardashians, is it?
No. I'm like watching... I don't know. I just feel like it's... How to say that in English? 综艺节目 or something?
Entertainment.
Right. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming on our banter. How about Bengyu, come talk a little bit about your history of selling flowers as an entrepreneur, as a solopreneur in the past.
I used to sell flowers. Now I'm selling real estate. It's quite a big jump.
Is that a slogan?
No.
Do you know the whole last time we had this initiative called the what is that? To teach new realtors to pass their exams. What is that thing?
Oh my God, homeschool.
Homeschool. Do you know like the whole script for the video? The others like very rhymey thing was written by him.
Oh, you're a secret rapper.
No. Because I couldn't even pronounce the word content. And Daniel was looking at me like,
what is that? What's that thing?
Content.
And just to say that three words, right? We had to reshoot for 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a very fun session. It's do we still have the video then?
I think still out.
We should play it.
Yeah,
we should play it. Okay.
It should still be
okay,
up
anyway,
somewhere.
For today's episode, we're going to talk about three main things. Number one is, of course, the additional buyer stamp duty. 60% now for foreigners. 65% for companies and entities. And of course, what is going to happen to the real estate market from now onwards? Because I was just thinking downstairs before I came out just now. What is going to happen next year, for example, 12 or 18 or 24 months down the road, if our policymakers decided to scale back on the ABSD for foreigners? For example, now we are 60%, we are sort of trapped. And maybe in the next 18 months, everybody will start to get used to this. And most of the purchases, I believe, will be done by Singaporeans still. And what if like 24 months later, our policymakers decided to say, okay, hey, 60% has been 2 years. Let's scale it back to 30% now. Then will that eventually open the floodgate to have more liquidity coming in? Because we've already had 15 rounds of cooling measures. So we're going to talk about that and the implication. Number two, we're going to talk about this particular hybrid of condominium projects, which are the integrated developments. Hey, what did we choose integrated projects last week, 2 weeks back? What was it?
Because we were filming the new launch banter for Arden, and I think we talk about integrated projects, right? And then you're like, okay, we need to talk about integrated projects in the next NOTG.
Okay. Yeah, we're filming Arden, and then we're talking about Helian Residences. Then we're like, okay, we have to do it this episode. And it was also because Bing did a very detailed analysis on integrated developments about 1 year back. So we want to bring up some of the key stats that we found. Number three, we're going to talk about, what's number three?
News. Talk about news.
Okay, the latest news.
I thought usually you decide the structure and the question, so we don't know what's the agenda.
Yeah. Our banter is non-curated one. So just for our audience purposes, if this is your first time joining us, this is the eighth round of banter that we had. It's non-curated. We only told our participants that we're going to talk about the latest real estate news for the past 2 weeks. And we're also going to talk more about financial stuff. And a quick disclaimer is that whatever we share is based on our personal discussion, opinion, and experience. So take note that this is not an educational program for any financial advice. So do make your own financial decisions after you have done your own homework. Now, let's talk about this part first. Because before we dive into ABSD, there was this latest news that came out saying that HDB prices has rose further. And there was another article talking about, in particularly, the 5-room flats has actually went up more, and that led most of the percentage rise over the past, I think, was this like in April or March? Okay, so this is the part that says that price of 5-room flats rose the most at 1.9%, while price of EAs and EMs increased by 1% month-on-month basis. So after the slew of cooling measures that came out, the most impactful one, in my opinion, was that 15 months cooling off period from selling landed condos, and that sort of prevented the people with more cash flow to buy into HDB properties. Unless you're above 55, you can buy 4 rooms or below. So what do you think about this, Bing, about this particular segment on HDB pricing? Do you think there will be more cooling measures that will come up on this particular segment?
We just concluded a case like that. Right. We sold someone's landed property, then they are... They're like 60, 70s. They just want to buy into a HDB to retire. Now, when we were hunting for the properties, right, we actually found the 4-room flats. The price point is super close to the 5-room flats already. So that was when this 15-month wait-out thing happened. And I think what is happening now is that they are realizing that the 4-room flats and the 5-room flats are so close that now more and more people are going to the 5-room flats, which then further propped up and pushed up this 5-room flat pricing.
Right. So who are these people? I mean, they'll be likely first time or maybe HDB to HDB people. Who do you think are these people that are buying into the 5-room flats?
Yeah, so a lot of people are buying the 5-room flats. You can be maybe a married couple that want to start their family, or yeah, people that are also maybe upgrading from a smaller size HDB, because we've also seen a lot of cases like that.
Right. What do you think, Hirong? Do you think there'll be more cooling measures
for the HDB market?
Yeah.
I think at the moment, I think there is enough cooling measures already, because most of the influx of pricing that we can prevent from the private sector, right, has already been put in with the 15-month wait-out period. And of course, the 15-month wait-out period do not sort of like restrict buyers who are retirees above 55 years old. So I think like generally it is still because the demand for HDB right is still high. Mm. And that's why we are still on the slight ongoing uptrend as well. So I personally don't think there should be more cooling measure at this phase.
Okay. So you think that is pretty much enough for the time being?
Because I think that in the next 6 months to come, because we also see a BTO application rate have started to reduce. And I think generally the market also normalized in a sense with regards to in terms of like the demand sector, and we can launch a BTO in a more, the consumers will have more choices from the BTO segment already. So I think the demand, as from the volume, has shown that resale demand has been tapering down. Yep. And so the supply side has started to take effect. So I think we have come to a situation to reach the equilibrium in terms of pricing wise. And so we don't need further measures.
Right. Mm. And of course, when I saw this news of the ABSD, if we come back to the private market, the main purpose was actually for this, right? I mean, it was an increment of 30 to 60%. We're talking about this particular segment, but I was very curious to see why was the major headline on the second property for 20%, and why is it not focusing on the 60%? What do you think, it was the cause for this headline, Michaela?
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were going to ask me more on the 30 to 60%. I mean, I think every government measure, so perhaps focusing on this 20% thing is just trying to let the government know, we're trying to control the market. We're trying to cool it a little bit. We're trying to give you priority for those who have not bought a property, a chance to also enter right. without things moving too much, which is why I think it went up to 60% for the foreign market.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Was it because of the fact that maybe there's some data in the sense that Singaporeans were the majority of people that caused the price to rise because yes. there's so much underlying demand, and technically the amount of foreigners that are buying is just such a low percentage? Because maybe let me just bring out these two charts. So first chart, these are charts that our PRB research team have always curated. And of course, the first one is to note that if we were to segregate it by new launches, percentage-wise for last year was about 7% by foreigners, and then resale is about 3%, and then in totality about 5%. And then when we look at this, Singaporean 77, PR 18%. Now, if we were to deep dive into this, this will look a little bit scary because it looks interesting but yet scary at the same time. So firstly, we see that the main volume, if we were to take quarter by quarter from 2021 all the way to 2023, the past 8 to 9 quarters, majority of the volume for condos and apartments were done by Singaporeans. Yeah. And when we move to the next one, foreigners, we can see the majority were being done by
Chinese investors.
Mm. There's a sharp rise in US investors because they are not being taxed at ABSD.
Yep.
Companies, Indonesia, Malaysia, India investors, also quite a substantial volume. However, when we look at this, our research team wanted to find out what and where are foreigners buying. So when we look at this, this is actually quite shocking in the sense that foreign investors are actually buying a lot of OCR resale. So what are your thoughts about this, Michaela? Do you think this was the cause for that doubling of effect, 30 to 60%?
I think the reason why they were also moving to the OCR was because the OCR had a gap lah.
Right.
When you see the prices in the RCR region and the CCR region.
Do you think this was the reason that our government immediately, because this was the first time, this is already the fifth time ABSD came out. I mean, you wrong tabulated the table, but this was the first time that the doubling out effect was so drastic and it took everybody by shock. I mean, would you have imagined that would you have ever imagined it's like 60% now?
60 is like, 60 will straight away kill off like the mid-luxury market. Those with AUMs of about 10 to 15 million, right? They will straight away be killed off because of this 60%. Because for a 1 million property, now they have to pay 600K in taxes. So they can definitely feel the pinch really. But I guess like this whole thing that's going on, right? They wanted to buy the OCR resale because they know that these are the mass market products. So this means that these foreigners they buy surely will be able to exit one because they enter into a low quantum. Mm. And then we follow like the fundamentals of investments, right, is always buy low, sell high. So for example, they maybe not touch the CCR, and then they go and touch the OCR. So the government is worried, like, very, very worried. And maybe like people like me can't afford a condo next time, even at OCR.
Right. Let me show you another graph. Okay, so firstly, PRs, majority are also buying OCR resale. And of course, Singaporeans, I mean, largely is a good mix, but of course, OCR resale is very popular because they comprise mostly in HDB estates. Look at this. I mean, our perception is that foreign investors are always buying, firstly, CCR, and they're always buying new launches. But this really defy our perception because they have been largely buying a lot of resale properties since the pandemic. I mean, it could be because they want an immediate place to stay. Secondly, they'll be buying a lot of OCR properties as well. What do you think this has happened, Yurong?
I think generally also maybe because from like the past research, right, we sort of look at data differently in a sense. So for example, if you will look at from a project transaction level, if you go to core central region, usually based on the residential status mix, so you will see there's a higher percentage of foreigners. So usually if you go to like a core central region, maybe you see 40-50% owned by foreigners. But when you look at like outside central region location properties on a project level itself, sometimes you only see that it can be less than like 1%, 1-2% of foreigner ownership. So general perception will be, oh, okay, foreigners are actually buying more into the core central region, or like, because headlines always mention like how foreigners do bulk purchases, hit record PSF in the luxury segment, how like, you know, like how many percentage of foreigners are buying into above 10 million luxury segment, above 5 million luxury segment, right? So there is always this perception that, okay, foreigners come in, they will purchase the core central.
Right.
And of course, I think foreigners were sort of like, I think they will also have like a few categories. And I think that for foreigners who are looking at long-term more for, not so much for investment standpoint, but maybe they are here thinking of more for logistic purposes for the children that are studying here in Singapore, then sometimes the outside central location might be suitable for them because of the proximity to international schools. Right. So there is also, so I think for people who are buying more for stay as more like a primary element for foreigners, they were looking out more for outside central region properties. And for foreigners that are probably non-resident, they're not staying in Singapore, right? Probably. They will be hunting more that is towards the core central region. So it's just that on the overall data-wise, right, we can see that there is more percentage to the OCR region at the moment. But I think it is a good move from the government to implement the additional buyer stamp duty because it shows that, number one, our government is very quick to react consistently since, you know, like when first cooling measure, why was it first implemented? That was because quantitative easing increases the money supply. And from, of course, you know, like if we look at how like the Fed balance sheet has increased pre-pandemic 2020, right? It has almost like doubled, right? From $4 trillion to $8 trillion. And so, of course, like we have implemented, I saw like, I think like 3 rounds of cooling measures like during this COVID kind of region. So it shows that I think as a Singaporean, I will feel very safe that the government has been consistently monitoring from a global perspective to ensure that the external liquidity do not come in and take away and reduce the affordability of Singaporeans' aspiration. So I think that's good.
Right. What you have just shared links to this article because there was an opinion piece just 2 days back.
Yes.
On the impact of ABSD hike on housing could go 2 ways. Of course, there are 2 scenarios that this writer positioned. One is that CCR properties might become more affordable, meaning that this could imply that in his or her opinion that this will make CCR properties become cheaper. I mean, to become cheaper, it might mean that price have to come down, right? Number 2, there might be a repeat of the housing tumbles of 1997 and 2008. However, let's have a look at what happened in 1997 and 2008, and maybe let me prick your brains on this a little bit. So my perspective is that no matter what happens, there will always be a hopeful thinking that
prices will drop.
Yes, like everybody, even though whether we own properties or we don't own properties now, we always have like an underlying mechanism in our mind that we secretly hope price will come down so that I can buy cheap, I can buy low, I can enter at a lower price in hope for making a better gain. Yeah, because nobody wants to buy at the peak of the market. However, when we look at the fundamentals, and of course what the author was trying to say was this deep here in 2008, we also need to revisit history a little bit, because prior to 2009, after the recovery of Lehman Brothers, so this was Lehman Brothers, 2008 October, there were almost no cooling measures. And after that, we had 15 rounds of cooling measures that is being now pumped into the entire property market. So we also need to see, does history repeat itself, or it is currently a very different season and different scenario? Now, when this cooling measure come out, I think we can have two reactions. One is that secretly we'll say that, oh, now the ABS is so high, I think price is going to come down. I better don't take any action now. I mean, and all the more, I know a lot of people has already been renting for the past 2 years, hoping that price will come down. A lot of people have been priced out. This will, I think, create even more confusion. Now, let's have a look at these three scenarios. Maybe we can share with us a little bit, like, what will you do? So I created this three hypothetical, fictional example of three different countries. The first country, Michaela, what do you think? I mean, maybe an example. Is it okay to say?
As in of a country that's like country A?
Yes. Like, what do you think?
It's okay. It is the country.
In your opinion, do you think this is Singapore? Okay, let me just edit this. No population growth. Yeah. Or not much population growth. Lah. Okay.
No economic growth. Country too big. Too much land, too much supply, not enough expats, not enough tenants. Buy property, but cannot... Am I allowed to say a country?
Okay, maybe let's not say the country. Like, okay, would you buy a property in this country if you were to be in this country? Or maybe you're looking for alternative investment. Or maybe you were born in this country. Would you feel safe from a ROI perspective to purchase properties as a form of investment? Or would you, because of this scenario... then you might think, okay, I don't think property investment in country A is worth it. I will look for alternative forms of investment. Maybe I'll invest in gold, stocks, things like that.
Bitcoin? What do you think?
I mean, yes, I think Bitcoin, you've already put all the points that anyone needs to know. Firstly, the population growth is not very helpful here.
Okay.
Economic growth not moving also is quite dangerous.
Right.
Country too big, meaning there'll be lots of land, lots of supply, meaning... Pam, pam, pam. A lot of, but then we have no population growth, so no one is taking over the properties. Yes.
Are there countries like this?
I guess.
Okay.
Am I allowed? Is it? Does it start with?
Okay, never mind. It's okay. Okay. I mean, do you think in this country, buying real estate is, in the midterm to long term, is a good form of investment? Or would you rather just rent? Or maybe you would just buy one for your own residence or for a family, but... you will not then invest in property because it just doesn't appreciate much.
Okay, perhaps if I'm from this country, I'm working in this country, I'm not moving out of the country, then I'll buy something cheap. I wouldn't mind, right?
Right. If it's, but if maybe I'm just there. One.
Yeah, I wouldn't like invest multiple properties.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Now, let's have a look at country B. So if it's country B, would you invest in this country?
Well, I would feel safer. I would feel like there's more opportunities for my ROI. Like I would see a stronger growth in terms of prices. Speculations in the property market is not something I would like in general.
Why?
I think it can cause a lot of volatility, which I think then for me is scary. But at the same time, I can see on the flip side, like, oh, people speculate. Oh, this is good. Let's buy. And then
you can shoot time
prices.
The market.
Yeah, we shoot prices upwards.
You can flip the properties. Yeah.
But then on the flip side, you can also see it like, you know how when there was a crash in the Bitcoin thingy, because everybody bought and then they blended it together.
Right.
There was one. No, it was a stock. I think it was a GameStop.
Right.
I can't remember.
GameStop.
Dogecoin.
GameStop itself.
GameStop,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
And then it was a Reddit thread where people like bought together and then they like hyped it up together.
Yeah, there's a documentary now on Netflix on GameStop. Yeah,
I should watch it.
Yes.
Yeah, but if that happens and they all speculate together, then it's also a bit dangerous.
Right.
Right.
So this has risk. So
would you... it has its own risk as well.
Okay, great. How about country C? Would you buy?
Yeah, I mean, you put it, price goes up gradually.
But it becomes boring. Price goes up gradually. It becomes boring.
But it's safe. It's definitely safe for me.
Right.
Like I would have... holding power. There's no speculation. But you say also price goes up fast. So, I mean, I would like my price to go up fast.
Oh, okay.
That was a typo.
Price goes up. I would like that.
Gradually.
Okay, still gradually. But then I have investors. I have rental demand. So these are things that will help my property, ma, right?
Mm.
And I would think this is... I choose country C.
Great. Would you think that some people will still not invest in property if they were in country C?
Investor. I mean, I can see it more.
And I will add in, like, government just introduced the 15th round of cooling measure in country C. Would you think someone will still not believe that, you know, it's safe to invest in a real estate in this country?
I think if I look at it in a perspective of someone my age trying to buy a house, then they wouldn't like this scenario.
Right. Why?
They would think, because prices are already like, we are catering to a lot of expats, we're catering to a lot of investors.
Mm.
Rental demand is so high, they can't even afford the rental.
Right.
Then I think these kind of people are the ones that that won't be happy and won't want to invest in Singapore, in the Singapore market.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because they are afraid that they'll be priced out.
Mm. I mean, they are already sort of priced out in the private residential
Fantastic. Market. Actually, that's a good point. Mm. Because if we were to look at A, B or C, which country is B? This is just a fictional example. I mean, a lot of countries fall into this scenario. Mm. But country B was Singapore.
Before 2009.
Yes, before 2009. It is precisely Singapore before 2009. Because if you look at this chart, this was what happened in the past when there were no cooling measures and there was so much volatility that because of the fact that there weren't any cooling measures, when Lehman Brothers collapsed, although it's so far away in US, but all markets are linked globally, it created an immediate sharp dip over here because there were too many speculators speculating the market. Now, in the past, you can loan 90% to buy a property, no cooling measures. I mean, people were applying multiple loans across multiple properties and flipping their options and things like that. And
over leverage,
it just collapsed the entire thing. So now we are at this status. Actually, we are country C now.
Mm.
But similarly, with so many cooling measures, I think people will also have a different set of concerns. So my question is that actually, no matter which country we are in, whether is it A, B, C, I think if let's say you are looking at whether is it your first or second or third property, it really boils down to your mindset of whether are we looking at opportunities within this segment, or are we always, you know, very worried about what is happening on a macro and a micro basis, because there will always be different policies that will come up.
Correct.
There will be 16, 17, 18, 19, 20th round. So I'm more concerned about families that were trying to time the market and trying to play around with their first primary property. And because of that, there will be opportunity costs, because you and your kids might be renting. And because of that, you might be priced out. And if you're always trying to time the market, and you get priced out eventually, you got to re-enter at a higher price, right? Mm. So what do you think, Bengyu? What do you think about these three scenarios? Country A, B, C, and then, of course, at the state that we're in. And of course, I do recognize the fact that because our price is already at this level, will our next gen also be priced out from private properties as well? What do you think, Beng?
A, B, and C. So A reminds me of my ex-country that I converted my citizenship from. So A, I will definitely buy a property to retire in.
Okay.
B, I will not touch at all. Right. Because real estate is a safe form of investment. I would not want to buy a Bitcoin, all right, and then live in a Bitcoin, because it's going up and down so fast. So C is a very challenging is a very challenging part, because now we are buying at an all-time high.
Right.
And then another round of cooling measures. So it takes a lot of courage, it takes a lot of thinking to be able to buy at number C. But I think is that if families try to time your first property, then you'll get very, very, very challenging.
Mm.
So right now we are actually working on one case. So this is a typical EC upgrader family.
Right.
So it's not because that they're also thinking, but because they're also bounded by the 5-year MOP. They want to move into Park Clementis 5 Beta. Park Clementis 5 Beta developer fully sold out.
Mm.
And then next, they had to aim the...
Sub-C units.
Sub-C units now are also priced out because of budget 2023, all the buyer stamp duty, cooling measures all came in. Now we'll consider 4 Beta sub-C. But the price of 4 Beta sub-C also, they got priced out from it. So now we're considering a 4-bedroom in Bukit Panjang. So it's very, very sad. So it's very, very hard to time the first property.
Actually, the 4-bedroom market is very scary. I mean, like recently we have one of the teammates trying to hunt for a 4-bedroom. I was just doing a search on the portal. It's like, I just keen above 1,005 square feet, below 2 million, 4-bedroom. I click on all the OCR zone, it's like the amount of supply is just dwindling and dwindling. It's very scary. What do you think?
But that's also because Clementi is a very special region. So of course, you know, like in Singapore, we classify into three different regions outside central locations. Where there's your like your western, northern kind of properties. We have the rest of central where like your things like Queenstown, your Marine Parade, Bishan, and your core central region like your District 910 and your downtown core area. Because technically speaking, Clementi, right, they are sort of like outside central region. But their prices is equivalent to a rest of central region kind of property. Because the appeal over at Clementi is because if I stay in Clementi, number one, I'm not too far off, but my children can actually start from primary school, go all the way until university. I don't have to really keep shifting around. And they have all like good schools, you know, like in the at the different levels. So that's, I think, like one of the interesting appeal of that location. In terms of overall, just now you mentioned about like, you know, like the cooling measure portion, right?
Yeah.
Going back to the cooling measure is, to answer the question, were a similar scenario happened back in 1997, where it's the Asian financial crisis, where prices tumble down, as well as 2008 global financial crisis. The answer, my personal opinion that like it probably will not. Rationale is because we have all these built-in cooling measures. Specifically, most important in 2013, we had total debt servicing ratio, which number one, we actually lend out loans from the banks. When they lend out loans, MAS require them to lend out at a stress test rate of 3.5%. When at a point of time, interest rate is 1.5% or lower. So what it means is, generally there's a lot of prudency in terms of loan, right? So when interest rate goes up, right, you don't see a huge portion of people because they cannot afford the increased monthly installment because it's already been pre-planned ahead that they have to let go. That's one. Second thing, of course, when we have seller stamp duty come in place, we have sort of like, you know, like eliminated most of what I call like speculators that the market was trying to flip option because it wouldn't make sense anymore.
Right.
And that's why in 2013, when all this slew of additional buyer stamp duty came in, the speculators went to the industrial property market. They went to the office space. And of course, you know, like over the last few years, we see it happening in the shophouse space as well.
Yes.
Right. So in summary, right now we are like at country ABC, right? I think generally, there is always a reason not to buy in any of these countries, right? So for example, A, there's no growth. Right. B, there's too much volatility. I might get burnt. Right. C, there's so many cooling measures. The upside is limited. So now there is only more downside risk.
Yes.
Right. And I think importantly, I think in A, B, or C, I think I can still buy real estate in all A and B or C. Depends on number one, suitability in terms of how it suits, you know, like my investment strategy.
Yeah.
Right. And also, what is that kind of, number one, of course, it must be affordable. So like country A, I will see it more like a holiday home, like a place to retire if I can afford. Like this really like spare cash. I'm not really thinking of it like, yes, appreciation, right?
Are you going for a holiday soon?
No, after at PLB, much time for a holiday.
Is it the most intense period of your career in the last 10 years?
Definitely.
You've never worked so hard before.
No, this is a misconception. I really work very hard.
Okay.
Now I work harder.
Good.
Okay. So country B, actually personally, I would like country B. I like country B because
time the market.
It's not like I like to time the market, but I like the volatility in the sense that because volatility can create more, returns.
Yeah. High risk, high return.
For very seasoned investors, but of course, novice investors will be injured.
Because actually for point B, right, importantly is if the fundamentals, like for example, like Singapore real estate fundamentals are there, right, and you have the holding power, you can always buy in. Because actually last time when we are at point B, right, the generic strategy last time is you just keep buying, you don't have to sell. And every time you buy, you already profited. Because there is no ABSD, you can use different names, you can use guarantor, you can bring your son, there's no income, extend loan tenure. But also country C, now is very different because how we advise our clients' portfolio, we try to be tax efficient in that sense. So most of the time in the residential property space, usually we only go up to like two properties for like a couple, right? So that they don't have to really pay additional buyer stamp duty. If they really love this residential market space, that they feel that it is safe and stable for growth, they might consider trust instrument down the road. But generally, now at our current phase in terms of portfolio building wise, we no longer buy and not sell anymore from a safety angle, because the only way for us to increase our total asset value for property, right, is we need to sell and buy such that we are not being penalized because of the additional buyer stamp duty. So we are not eroding the returns through this additional tax.
Right. Thanks for sharing. Why do you think, even though after the ABSD was announced, one day, I don't know whether it is 1 or 2 days later,
blossoms by the park. Extremely has good happened.
I mean, two days later, I was giving a talk at UOB, one of the brunch, and I was giving a talk. This was happening at One North. And of course, this is also District 5. So, Michaela, what are your thoughts on this? And of course, the talk of the news is that there was a
China investor that bought four units
or something
after
here,
the cooling measures.
Yeah. So why do you think? On top of this, the curious part is the underlying demand from Singaporeans and PRs, right? Mm. And one shot, 76%, 209 units will snap up. Why do you think there's this pent up demand? And
I think Singaporeans generally still have a lot of confidence in the market. Mm. Like you said, all the cooling measures is really to protect the volatility in the Singapore market. So it's to really keep it like a safe haven. Mm. I think firstly the confidence, right? Then secondly, I think they've also these people who are buying as investors, I believe lah. Mm. Because if you really look at what's around, maybe they are perhaps also seeing the potential in the area. Mm. They are looking at past transaction data. Like if you compare the last one, which was One North Eden, it was at a 2001 PSF.
Yep, yep, yep.
And now this was launched at 2.4. Mm. So that's already a $300 yep. PSF. Mm. And then I think they're also, when they go, they also realize that there's another plot also coming up. Yes. So they're seeing a lot of growth in the area. And I think perhaps they're being... Not all properties are the best option, right?
Very good.
All properties can buy, but which one is better to buy is a different story. And maybe this made sense for them in their portfolio, the way they looked at it in terms of the growth in the area. So they had confidence. Mm.
Right.
That's I would have bought Blossoms. No, actually I would have bought One North Eden, but I had no money.
You bought something, right? You're waiting for it, right?
Woohoo! Yes, in time to come.
Yeah. When is it coming?
End of the year.
Awesome. Is it going to be a housewarming?
Yeah, she warms it up herself.
not for PLB teammates.
We'll see.
A lot of packing, a lot of cleaning up to do. Okay, Bing, what can you see from this trending? Based on what is balanced now, 66%, I think you'll eventually sell, but... What's the rationale that 1+study and 2 bidders are completely stepped up, including 2+study? There's only left with 2 units. Why are the 3 and 4 bidders, especially the 4-bid premium, having 24 units balanced? There's only 1 sold. Why do you think that's the case in this area? Because this is a little bit different from the very, very, very popular OCR area that we usually see the bigger units being taken up quickly.
Mm.
Why do you think that's this trending?
Okay, so 2 reasons why the 1+study and the 2 bedrooms are so hot. So firstly, right, within that whole One North area, right, let's say you compare to projects like One North Residences. So One North Residences, 1 bedders, extremely big in size, maybe about 1,002 square feet. Quantum is 1.5 million. So this whole thing that's going on here, right, is a quantum play.
Mm.
And do you all remember Lawrence Wong being an agent? He gave that speech about being an agent, saying how salaries should rise in tandem.
Right.
With, BTO prices. But salaries might not be rising in tandem with private property prices. So because of that, anything that is a low in quantum will get stepped up first. And then a lot of these are investor buyers buying 1+study just to rent out.
Yeah, because the area is like the Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley.
Right.
A lot of tech professionals.
A lot like MOE HOQ. HOQ.
HQ.
MOE HQ there. So I think the rental play there would be perhaps quite strong.
Rental player is extremely strong. One of residences, we just left it up on the portal. Straight away offer came in. Even no viewing. 1 bidder, 5,000.
Which one is that? One of the residences.
One North Residences.
Rental lah. Okay, rental, sorry. Right. I was just trying to copy and paste the price here as Bing is talking. Okay, Bing. So this is the price. I mean, the two bedders are like 2 mil, three bedders, 2.3 to 2.87. This is the four bedder pricing.
This is why it's balanced at the moment.
Yes. What? So why do you think the four bidders are having that balance?
3.1 to 4 million. Let's say we have to break down the mortgage. That's about, what, a 20K monthly mortgage. Then you less off the CPF OA contribution. Then you probably have like, what, 16K to top up in cash.
Right.
Then to top up every month 16K in cash, how much must you earn? I don't know. For me, I would need to at least earn 50,000.
Okay, so a typical four bedder right there is at about 1,507 square feet. The higher floor ones are about 3.8 million. The lower floors one are about 3.4 to 3.5 million. Then if we talk about the three bedder, the C1 layout now is at about 2.5. Compact version is about 2.3 plus. Then I think the dual key version is about 2.7, 2.8. So what are your thoughts on this, Yurong?
In terms of the pricing?
Yeah, do you think, I mean, like this balance 66 units, which one would be the next to go?
I would think like the three bedroom compact will still be there to go. I think currently quantum basis, you know, like for the two bedder, they are only left with the higher quantum one for like this segment. Generally, why this project perform well, of course, it is we are in an investment location in the sense that for clients who want to look for like good rental yield, good rentability, because of all the tech MNCs internationally as well as locally are there. So of course, rentability is there if you are going for like a yield play. And that's why for people who wants to rent out, usually most of the demand goes to one bedder and two bedder from a rental demand perspective. And of course, right now from the purchase demand perspective is, of course, the quantum is lower, it's easier to go in as well. Personally, I will find that for like four bedders that are like 4 mil quantum and all that, personally, from an investment angle, I will probably consider other options in the sense that because end of the day, it's always easy to buy a property. As long as you can come up with the means of the down payment, you can finance the loan, you can lock in that paperwork and the contract. However, whether it makes financial sense, you will actually know it when you're trying to exit. Whether this property actually got you that kind of returns that you want, and whether does it take a lot of effort to find the end users again to divest your property to, right? And I think like from a major standpoint is for the audience is at every price point that you want to enter, we always look at what are my potential options in terms of property type category, meaning like where is it a landed or is it a condo or is it a high price HDB, right? And second thing is at this kind of price point, which region do I want to focus in? Is it the outside region or the real central region? But in summary, you could say that in terms of the price point, right? Whenever we move one region closer to the central location, right, you get one less bedroom usually for like the same specific kind of like price quantum they're looking at. And then I will compare within that same region and district itself, right? Generally, what projects will give me better attributes in terms of down the road 5 years later when I want to sell, it will have higher demand. So generally, I try to work from the angle. This is, of course, reverse, probably from investment perspective. Because end of the day, pricing is just a combination of supply and demand, right? Of course, we have all these other factors that attribute to that. But we just want to look at what is considered to me a safe entry is what has more demand. Right. Not in terms of what is the lowest PSF with regards to like safe entry. Yeah, and rationale is because after, I think, when the world started getting used to quantitative easing, right, we can no longer see price the same as before. So like in terms of like the very value investing standpoint, you know, like buy intrinsic value, you know, buy low, sell high, these kind of things, right? No longer apply that much because the new intrinsic value is different because everything is inflated with this influx of liquidity through all these rounds of like quantitative easing, you know, like COVID, where we really, you know, double up 25% increase in the US money supply. Yeah.
Yurong, you're a true blue investment consultant.
You just vomit out everything like one shot. Yeah. Fantastic. thought process. Just now you mentioned about the fact that in terms of price point, things are very different right now. And talking about price point, I want to move on to the next topic, which is to talk about the cream of the crop in the condos and apartments market. So just a brief backdrop. At this stage in time, we have about 355,000 stock in condos and apartments in Singapore. So in totality, you add in everything, condos, apartments, ECs, you have 355,000, but only less than 6% belongs to this particular hybrid version of apartments, condos, yes, which are called the integrated projects, right? So they're integrated. They usually have a bus interchange. If no bus interchange, they're directly connected to a mall and the MRT station. This is a summary from one of the article we plug out online. And of course, there are various articles online. You can have a look at it. 17 projects right now. The latest one will be One Holland V, as well as up-and-coming Reserve Residences. We just filmed Reserve Residences on PRB Insights channel. Bing, share with us, do you think integrated projects are overpriced?
Integrated projects are a separate asset class on its own, because of the sheer lack of more supply of integrated projects. Actually, currently now, if we were to express the total number of condos, integrated projects are about 6%, right? But if we look at those that are already completed, right, actually it ranges from about 3 to 4% when we took a whole vertical summation of it. So actually it's very interesting. So when we study a lot of the past integrated projects, for example, like currently now on the screen, maybe Watertown. Watertown was also launched at a peak kind of pricing as compared to its competitors, because in Punggol, there are a plethora of condos there. So many condos. But even now, Watertown, the kind of price gap is still being maintained as compared to its counterparts pricing. So I think, this is my own personal thought. Mm. I think for the next few integrated projects, it'll be very interesting, because the pricing, Melvin thinks that Reserve Residences will be launching at 2008. I think it's very close to the 3000 PSF mark already. So then it might start to be a little bit blurrier.
No, my theory yesterday was that, because it's by far east, they will not kill their own project, because they still have balance units at One Holland V, which is already doing at 2.8 to 3.2. Also, Bingyu was hoping for 2.5. But if 2.5 is Reserve Residences price, you should really just buy it, because it should be very good. Okay, Michaela, what do you think about integrated developments? Your own viewpoint. Do you think, if you have a choice, would you buy a normal condominium or would you pay a premium for an integrated project? Okay, because just a quick backdrop. Last time, you see North Park Residence at number 11, when it was being launched, everybody was saying that this price is too high.
Yes.
But end up, when it TOP and the first-time owners get a chance to sell them the resale market, everybody made a substantial amount of gain. Yep. They see so much upside. Then when Pasir Ris 8 was launched at 2000 PSF, everybody was saying that it's overpriced. But now when we look back, 2000 PSF is like a thing of the past. It's like so cheap now. So, Michaela, now we have two projects left, right?
Yes.
One Holland V at Reserve Residences.
Yes.
Would you go in if it's at about $2,800 to $3,000 per square foot for Reserve Residences?
So we know that integrated projects are just more expensive, right? It's been the way. It's been showing.
Usually, they are priced 25 to 30% more expensive than its surrounding counterparts.
25 to 30%. Mm. Yeah. So, if I look at it as a investor kind of point of view, I agree. I think my rental will command higher, but at the same time, at the expense of paying a higher quantum in the first place. Would I be able to get the same rental yield for somewhere nearby that is not directly connected to the condo? I think I can still, it will spill over, because perhaps the actual site will be too expensive for people to rent there, and they'll just come over to where I'm at instead.
Right.
So my perspective is, perhaps I wouldn't.
Right.
Because it might be a bit high, and I think that the condo around will have opportunities to grow and catch up.
Actually, Michaela gave a very, very good point on that portion, because actually, most of the time, integrated developments do not really give the additional, you know, like alpha in terms of like returns as compared to the surrounding projects. So, for example, of course, like North Park performed well, because we want to look at whether there are substitute choices for your future buyers. So, for example, in the Yishun area where North Park is at, you know, just one link way to Yishun MRT station, you can see that actually within 5 meter radius, there are no other condo projects to choose from.
Yeah.
Right. So hence in the same time region, where 1 kilometer away there was a Symphony Suite, there was a launch and North Park launched at the same time with sort of like a 30% kind of price gap in terms of PSF.
Mm.
But North Park Residences in the next, when was that? In the next like 5 years or so, actually outperformed in terms of returns.
Yeah.
However, if you look at like Watertown, right? Watertown, which is in Punggol. Sorry. Watertown. What is
Punggol?
No, like, as in Watertown is the shopping mall name. The
Waterway Point is the shopping mall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Watertown is that project, right? So Watertown and surrounding, there are like Treasure Trove, for example.
Yes.
So actually in a similar time region, actually Treasure Trove, actually, which is just opposite, profited more as compared to Watertown.
Mm.
Mm. Right. Even though both also went up. And of course, I think from an investment standpoint, if you are just purely looking at gains, you might not need to specifically consider for integrated development.
Mm.
But I think if you are like a hybrid purchaser where you want to invest, but at the same time, at your stage of life, you want that kind of convenience, especially if you are like a retiree, or especially you have a lot of like young family members, your time is very tight. Integrated development can really give you that convenience in terms of that boost of happiness on a daily basis. Because
yeah,
it's not all about like, you know, like monetary returns.
Mm. It feels good to stay in the integrated project because your kids come down, they can just go down and buy food, go down to popular bookstore.
So I have two stories.
Okay, right? Then Ben also got one story about a coconut thing. Okay.
Coconut thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I have two stories to share. So one, I was, one day I was at Treasure Trove, just opposite Watertown, Waterway Point, where the MRT station is. That day I happened to like not be driving because my wife took the car. I was like, no worries, you know, it's just across the road. And after my viewing, it rained heavily. And I was like, wow, how I wish I'm doing a viewing at like Watertown instead, where, you know, like it is just that one street away by you. Sometimes when it heavy rains, right, that kind of like 100 meters away from our station suddenly becomes so far away.
Right.
That's point one. Point two is also I've worked with like clients where they want to purchase properties for their parents, etc. and all that.
Mm.
And they have considerations like, for example, oh, I want something that is convenient, is sheltered to the MRT station so that even when it rains heavily, that I will reduce the chance of like, you know, like fall accidents.
Yeah.
Mm. Because, you know, I don't need to go through like, you know, like a wet area and this kind of thing. So there is definitely a very strong appeal for a kind of target audience for this kind of integrated development.
And I think the audience is like widespread all the way from like families without cars all the way to retired couples.
Mm.
They love to live in integrated projects. I mean, just a note about this. This is already completed. This is fantastic. I mean, like my wife just brought Ethan there to the library. It looks fabulous. I have not got a chance to visit there. I mean, even my daughter says it looks fabulous, the library and everything. Okay. Ben, talk about your coconut stuff.
What books does Ethan even borrow? Sorry.
He read all the fictional books.
Tony Robbins.
He loves dinosaur stuff.
Dinosaur.
Okay. I mean, my wife reads him everything, like wide array of books and stuff like that. Maybe we should introduce Michaela to be the English teacher.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, what's your coconut story about the water town thing?
Cannot repeat a coconut story. I already said the whole story yesterday. Okay, but anyways.
It's a different channel. Different audience.
Okay, anyways, right. Okay, before the coconut story, we'll get there. But I just want to tap on something that Yiron just said because it's very correct. So for example, like North Park Residences, it was launched in a time whereby no other substitute products. So when approaching integrated projects, right, we need to be very careful when studying kind of past case studies.
Yep.
So just need to be very sharp. So for example, upcoming reserve residences, when watch our episode, I reviewed what is the bedroom type that we should all go for. That was very interesting. Anyways, back to this.
This is a self-coyo session.
So reserve residences, some can buy, not everything. Okay, so back to this, Watertown. So I was also selling a property at Watertown. Then I told all the buyers to meet me downstairs outside the lift lobby. So I'll go and fetch you. And then when I hit down from the lift, right? Oh, Ren San Ren Hai. So many people right outside. You know why? Everyone is queuing for Mr. Coconut. So unfortunately, they got all lost in that Mr. Coconut queue.
That you couldn't find a buyer.
I couldn't find a buyer.
That was the story. What?
No, he's saying that he won't buy an integrated project.
Okay.
Oh, because it was
Because he finds that it's like, It's too crowded. He likes a quiet place.
But let's say if you are Mr. Coconut lover, then go and buy Watertown, Stack 24, Block 69.
Come down straight away. Thank you.
Are you selling that?
Straight away can go and keep Mr. Coconut. Can save $4. If you save $4 per week, you save 20.
Why you save $4?
Because on the delivery fee, like, you know, you call delivery what? Just go down, order Mr. Coconut, then you save $16.
Mr. Coconut, if you are watching this channel and you want to sponsor us, please contact.
Okay. Michaela, what Michaela shared, right, was the disparity effect that we have always been using in terms of this technique for our clients. So same thing. What she has just shared is that, for example, when Sengkang Grand Residences was launched and is like sold out for like 80-90%, and you know the launch price, because the launch price was at this range.
Yes.
It sort of completed its selling phase by 2022, where everything was sold out. So average, it was done at about $1,600 to $1,800 per square foot. What she's trying to say is that instead of going for this, her own preference is that she will go for this.
Esperina Residences.
Yeah. Well, not specifically.
Yeah, so this is an example, right? Actually, Sengkang Grand Residences gave a sharp rise in Esperina prices.
Yeah.
Because when it was launched, I don't know, 2019 or something, there was like, look at the prices of Esperina right now. It's like 1,004. All the way from about 1,001, there was just like a sharp escalation in terms of jump. The jump is like in a very quick fashion one. It's like 2021, 2022, then suddenly boom. Mm. Within like a 12 to 18 months period, it jumped by $300. And I think one of the reasons is because Sengkang Grand Residences has been sold completely. And people were thinking, if this TOP in 2023, end of this year, they bought at 1,007, they are going to resell in the TOP market, resale market at $2,000.
Yes.
If I buy at 1,000, 3,004, I still have a $600 gap.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
What do you think, Makeda? Would you buy Esperina Residences?
Oh, yeah. If the other side is going to market at 1,007 PSF, the next person that's going to come in, they're going to buy at whatever. It makes more sense for them to come into a... Okay, but then again, I'm also considering the factors that Yurong said. If it's an elderly family, if it's people who don't want to drive a car, maybe they'll go there. But with crossing the road, really, I think doesn't make that big of a difference. Mm. So for me, my perspective would still be buy something that has more opportunity to catch up.
Right. They already made 2019, the first few buyers bought at 1,006, 1,007. Actually, the integrity of this project is quite good. I mean, look at this. It maintained all along the same line, and then people are already doing the sub-sale already.
1,009.
All right. So when TOP definitely is at 2,000. Mm. So they're going to see a $300 gain. So this will set a new benchmark for whole Buangkok area.
The whole area. Let's talk about Woodleigh.
of course, there are some.
Is always
yes.
There are some key learning points from this example. Of course, number one, Esperina Residences is the most profitable executive condo since Bishan Loft. Of course, Bishan Loft previously was super profitable because it is the very rare executive condo that is at a city fringe kind of location, because most ECs
quite quiet.
Bishan
Loft.
Is it nobody want to sell, or like location is too good? Or?
Very little people want to sell, because at Bishan, right, the kind of PSF and nearing good schools. So that's one. Second thing is, of course, we learned that number one from, let's say, a pure investment standpoint, right? Actually one road across, right? You can still get the same convenience. You don't need to pay the premium. You get to enjoy your privacy as well, like what Bingyu mentioned. With that good enough disparity, right? Then you will make the surrounding projects pop up in terms of pricing. But that is also partially because in terms of Esperina Residences, the layout generally, there are other also push factors that make Esperina Residences sort of like palatable to the buying audience in this current juncture. And the other thing is, of course, you know, like coming back is, even though at integrated residential project like Sengkang Grand, we will know that even if you buy into Sengkang Grand previously, seeing how the new OCR benchmark PSF is, right, there is still a lot more room to go. And like, we know that when it TOPs, 2000 is like the baseline.
Base. Yeah, if not the
baseline. Yeah. So end of the day is, from the perspective of number one, most of the time we will not know end of the day which project will absolutely give us the best kind of returns.
Yes.
But what we can see is from using the different kind of the models that we have, whether is it like PLA mode analysis, whether it's our disparity effect. We use, based on the past record of performing properties, what are the kind of attributes they have, and we try to simulate potentially down the road.
Yep.
If today I enter the market, right, there's a higher probability that if I buy into properties with similar kind of disparities, similar kind of attributes, I have already limited my downside, and then that will allow, you know, like my profits to potentially run with much lesser risk.
Right. Mm. Thanks. And actually, there was actually like a triangular effect. When this was like almost sold out or it was still selling with the balance unit, this started to rise in price, and then yeah, that spiraled this, the quads, to also increase in pricing as well. So there was like a lot of layers of disparity effect that's happening. In fact, now my perspective is that this project is too Compass cheap Heights. Now. Yeah, it's like it's too cheap.
Compass Heights is the oldest and the first ever
the OG integrated project
development.
Yeah. And let's talk about Wule a little bit. Bing, what's the research on Wule? Is just TOP or going to TOP?
TOP.
TOP Wule, they just got their keys.
Okay. Mm. Share with us a little bit about this project. I mean, this is the project that actually I have a lot of passion on as well. A lot of... I did a video like, I don't know, 3 years back, because I just find that it's so interesting to have this bridge over to Alcove Lake, and the onsen is right there.
And this bridge, the developer specifically went to buy over from the... So I've heard Melvin's Woodley story, right? About 6 to 7 times.
And just intrigued that you can walk underground to opposite this HDB enclave, and the bus interchange there is not even underneath. It doesn't cause noise pollution for the whole project. And actually, I was very impressed with Ben Yu when he was very young that time.
So now he's still young.
So when he was a young boy, he did this. Oh my goodness, look at this. The effort that he go and find out all the MOP date of the surrounding supply. Because I asked him, I said that, hey, Bing, do a solid deck on Woodley. We want to see what is the potential audience if you were to invest in Woodley in 2019, 2020. Mm. In future, who can you sell to? And in future, these are your new audiences. 2026, you're going to have this group of people that will hit the MOP. Yep. 2027, 2030, there's like close to 10 to 11 clusters around it. Now, share a little bit about your research.
It's a very staggered exit strategy. So you don't get flats all selling all at one time, all MOPing at one time. Then as a result, they cannot make the potential HDB gains. So because it's staggered, then each cluster might have a good opportunity to make their own relevant gains. Mm. And then from there, they will then channel the money. Let's say if they really like the area, then they'll buy into Woodley.
Michaela, what do you think about this whole area? Park Colonial, Woodley, now it's TOP. Mm. And of course, like all these projects, what do you think?
Okay, I can't remember what Park Colonial was bought at, but I met a client, I think just a few weeks back, and he was sharing how much he bought Woodley.
Mm.
He got it at about, I think, 1,008 PSF.
Oh.
That was early on. I think Park Colonial was also around that price.
If Park Colonial was sold out because there was a cooling measure. Mm-hmm. About 2007.
2018.
Yeah, it was like the night
with
of...
the riverfront residences.
People were queuing and shouting, and it was like all over the news. And
2018
had... additional buyer stamp duty.
Okay.
Yeah, because last time the cooling measures usually were released at 5 p.m.
Mm. Mm.
Then people have like a window of 6 hours to queue out at the show flat.
Now they always release at 11.
Oh, you were not born yet. No, yeah. No, that's what happened to La Fiesta or Luxury, something like that.
Oh.
And people were like queuing up, then they were like shouting at the show flat.
So much money buy condo, and I still was that's
so our government learned from this, and now they launch at 11:59.
So even if you want to rush down to sign the OTP, a little bit too late, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough.
No, then when they started announcing 11:59, a lot of people backdated the OTP. So they sent in IRS officers to catch people and stuff. And now, I mean, now it's very good in terms of this
naughty,
policy.
Naughty. Mm. Very naughty. Yes.
Okay. Share a little bit. Okay, continue. So sorry.
Yeah, okay. So they purchased at the 1,007, 1,008. Now we're seeing prices go up to 2,004 for Woodley residences.
Right.
Which what means the person got 600 PSF gain. Yeah. Firstly,
they must sell first.
Yeah, assuming. I think they are transacted. Or that there are transacted units at 2004, if I saw square foot correctly. Which is insane because they made a 600 PSF difference. But I think Woodley is special because it has all the HDB upgraders.
Yep.
Yes. There haven't been, I guess, many new projects in there as well.
Right.
Now, all the projects around the area are trying to play the catch-up game.
Yeah. Right.
Look at this.
This is
rough.
Which Woodley residence?
This is Woodley.
So, I think the last transacted, yeah, what? Sorry, then I see wrong.
No, okay, but you're right. People are asking at 2.4. Mm. Yeah, I mean, all the asking prices are at 2.4. Nobody will want to market it below that.
Mm.
Yeah, so you're correct.
So I think this one, in terms of integrated project, right? If we go back to the point on just now, which one I would buy, right? Mm. Park Kowloon technically is like slightly cheaper.
Yes.
It's just across the road.
Mm.
I save a little bit of money. Which would I go for? Which would I go for, actually? I don't know.
But because when Park Colonial and Woodleigh Residence just launched, there was actually a huge gap in terms of pricing. Because Woodleigh, 1,005 plus PSF starting from. And Woodleigh Residences, at a point when it first launched, it was like 2.1, 2.2 PSF. Down the road, there was some price adjustment from the developer. They changed the show flat design. They give the one price, you know, like, regardless of your floor level kind of promo. And that's where, you know, like, then at the right season, then Woodleigh Residence become like a go-to kind of project from like a number standpoint.
It was a whole cycle lah. So basically the conclusion is that integrated projects are like the catalyst to the whole price action. So they will start, for example, at the start, I think Woodleigh launch first, then after that their units were maybe sold about 30-50%, then Park Kowloon launch 100% sold out. Then after that Woodleigh started to play catch up lah. Last time when Woodleigh started selling for 1,008, right, then people will call Siap when we ask them to buy Woodleigh. We asked George to buy.
We've been trying to convince George to buy, but
convince George to buy.
That time I was trying to ask him to buy the $1.5 million three bed compact facing outside. Yes. He don't want. Then after that, sold already. Yes. Then I asked him to buy facing inside 1.79. He also don't want. It's okay. That's
now 1.5 million.
Okay, PDPA. Let's stop discussing about George.
Now 1.5 million, you almost can't find any rest of central region location kind of three bedder properties.
Challenging, very challenging.
I still remember the 570 square feet. First owners, they bought it at about 1.05 million. So now they're trying to see a 300,000 gain. This two bed, two bath was averagely at about 1.2 million. So people are asking about 1.6 now.
One bedder, their down payment was what, 300K? They used 300K to make 300K.
Okay, no, I said, of course, to me, I am more, it will not transact at that pricing at this current juncture.
This is asking.
Yeah, this is asking pricing, right? Yeah. If one bedder, if one bedder make
This is the one.
Imagine, right? How
this is the one.
Yeah, if one bedder make 300,000, so imagine if you were to buy into the correct three bedder, how much more gains would you have made? Yeah.
This was all done at 1.5 plus.
Mm.
This is the asking price. I mean, they might still transact at 1.9, right? And anyone been to the project? You've been already?
As in the show flat. I mean, the actual project, Christina.
We're going to film a two beta soon.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll be very fascinated to look at the onsen.
You can cross over the road.
No, because you can cross. Your kids can push their bike. There's a lift down to the Alcove Lake. And then you can just cycle. There's no need to cross the road. It's beautiful.
Finally, awesome. Yeah,
and there's a police station downstairs.
Mm.
Okay.
It is actually it's the only integrated development with a police station.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Okay, fun facts.
We should go. Okay.
So So I guess you need to find an integrated development as a police station.
Well, okay, let's continue to talk about this.
Just kidding.
Wait, I wanna. Okay, so my question is, I actually haven't even concluded what I would buy.
Please.
If the price difference is only 100 PSF, would you go and buy Woodleigh or Park Kowloon now?
Woodleigh.
Just because it's just below, right?
No, because end of the day is you can buy any kind of properties with the right entry price and the right disparity. So you see, like, usually, you know, like most people will probably think like they will see like properties from whether is it number one a good product first, right? But a good product at the wrong price for that season will also mean that you have to hold much longer just for other prices to do a catch up. So meaning you will have like years of stagnancy and then you can see price growth when it becomes like now it looks attractive again.
Mm.
But if let's say today, I always mention, for example, you know, sometimes people avoid certain kind of properties, right? But I just give a very extreme example, even though usually it doesn't happen. So for example, let's say your this project, second floor, face the bin center. Generally, will you want to buy?
Maybe not.
Most people will probably avoid it, right? But given enough discount for a similar product category, you can buy it because that will also mean that your built-in margin is there.
Mm.
From an investment standpoint, of course, maybe from a own sales standpoint, you might not want, no matter how cheap it is.
Mm.
So I wanted to say all of that, plus the fact that there's an onsen pool.
And the police station.
And the police station. Yeah. Extremely safe.
All right.
This was done in 2020, right, Bing? Or 2021?
2021.
This was done...
Park Esta.
2021. You okay, weren't here yet.
Look at this.
Prior to me coming into...
That time, Park Esta sub-sale was done at this price. You're trying to do this analysis for a client that was inquiring about Woodleigh residences. Yes. And then, of course, you were looking at the asking price of Park Colonial balance units. And then you look at Bartley View. And then you look at the market trend. And let's have a look at this. That time, you were looking at Northumberland potential launch price. This was the Piccadilly Grand.
Piccadilly Grand.
And then you have Armour residences. Then this Lentor, right? Yes. Look at this. 1.5 years later, everything is coming true.
I called it there. I called it there.
So Woodleigh Residences that time was asking at 2.1, right? Then this was the projected launch price. Pricing. Yeah. And I mean, like, isn't it amazing how time moves? And then when we look back, that time we were seeing like, oh, 2021 is like very crazy, right?
But yeah.
Now everything has changed. What do you think will be, Michaela, the state of private property PSF level in 5 years' time? I mean, like 2028. What do you think will be an average launch PSF of an OCR new launch?
That scares me, though, to think about what's going to happen in 5 years'
time. Now it's already 2000 or 2002.
This is what's happening, right?
Yeah. What do you think? Now it's averagely 2000 to 2002 OCR. What do you think in 5 years' time it will be?
I got a crystal ball. Give me a nut. I mean, right now we're already seeing RCR 2004, right?
Yeah.
That is... How much is Lentor now?
Lentor is about 2001, 2002.
Okay. So maybe... Are we going to see 2000?
No, you must ask the question regarding your... You're talking about outside central region location that is very near the RCR, like your Lentor Modern. Or you're talking about like outside central region location
generally,
where you're at the end, at the edge of Singapore.
Generally, just
then you jump, you can go to the sea, that kind of like distance to the boundary of the Singapore island.
Yeah, because it makes a difference, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What? The range, what do you think?
Two, five?
Just say, okay, so the whole Lentor area also very exciting. Now they're doing about, clocking about 2002, right?
Mm.
Then Gokoland just snapped out another piece of land.
Mm.
They were the only bidder.
Mm.
Even though they're the only bidder, right? They said that, and they secured the land price at a very good price, right?
900 plus PSF.
900 plus PSF or something like that. Mm. 900 to about 1,000. Mm. They said that, do not let this signify that we're going to launch it at a very low price. Mm. So I think it shows a lot about the developers' bullish confidence.
There's also two reasons. Number one, why you continue to build to bid land around your first project is because you can monopolize the pricing and you can stagger the launch price. So that's point one. And you can, of course, you know, like consider how to launch different products to entice like a different kind of segment based on maybe the facade, based on the facilities, based on the design, so that you don't do a direct competition with regards to your own product. So I mean, from a strategic business standpoint, it makes sense on developer. And second thing, because URA has changed the gross floor area kind of definition. Mm. And hence, actually, end of the day, right, now the in terms of profit margin wise, it's higher cost now for the developers. Yes. So even though the land price is lower, but in terms of their break-even price actually is not that low, considering just from the land price itself. So hence, that's why they will not launch significantly lower. It don't make business sense.
Right. Last topic before we end.
Shall we just give the audience a quick summary of like roughly in the last 6 months, in the sense, right, like a PSF kind of range for some of the integrated developments.
Sure. Let's share.
So for example, right, of course, last 6 months, Bedok residents, highest PSF done, 1,008. So I'm talking about highest PSF done in the last 6 months, right? So Bedok residences, 1,008. Helian residences at Bukit Panjang, 1,008. North Park residents, highest is actually 1,009. Okay, but of course, Poise residents, close to $2,000. Sengkang Grand, 1,937. Pasir Ris 8 at Pasir Ris, 2,001. Park Place, which is at Paya Lebar, 2,278. Woodleigh residences, 2,144. And if you go to the more luxe segment like Canning Hill Pierce, $3,248.
Can you send me this chart later?
South Beach residences, 4,005.
Wallich Residences, 4169 Tanjong Pagar. South Beach is at Esplanade. Orchard Residences, 3245 PSF. One Holland Village Residences, 3391 PSF. Marina One Residences, 2836 PSF. Dual Residences, 2450 per square feet. Of course, this is of course highest PSF. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think let's put this entire chart in the PDF for our audience and we'll just put in the link below.
Sure.
In the description box. Just in case you're keen to look at the price range of integrated projects right now. Actually, I think when you are saying that, it seems that some of the integrated projects actually has a pocket opportunity because looking at the normal new launches projects and looking back at all this resale one, it seems that there could be some level of opportunities. We can perhaps do a more in-depth study and then we talk about it on the next episode. Now, last one to prick everybody's brain. This will lead on to our next banter where we have our special guest from the Assembly Place because it seems that this is not cooling down and it's not flowing downstream towards HDB apartments. Where is this place? I mean, 5-room HDB flats over $6,000. I mean, where is this? Like, is this in town area, Pinnacle Duxton, and all the kind of zoning, Cantonment, or even Ang Mo Kio? What do you think about this, Bing and Makeda?
Oh, it was in Ang Mo Kio.
Yeah. I mean, like, why is this happening? I mean, where are we heading to? And what is your advice for young people? I mean, especially if, let's say, they don't want to live with parents, they want to come out and rent, maybe just to have a little bit of space. What is your advice for young people?
Bing, how much do you rent out your One North?
$5,000.
For one bedroom. Yeah.
Very scary.
Now, this is $6,000 for 1,002. Naturally, I think they're just going to... It's always about spillover, right? There's not enough. They can't... For maybe this price... They're going to get something much smaller elsewhere. Mm. They're willing to compromise an HDB lifestyle instead.
How much is a common room now in a HDB? A master room?
Just the room?
Just the room.
Maybe about 1,005?
About
1,005 can get?
1,005 can get.
You mean it's too expensive or too cheap?
Too low. I thought it's like 1,008 or something.
I think it depends on the location.
Location.
Yeah, imagine you are aircon at a very outskirt.
How about common bedroom?
Wait,
1,002. HDB common room.
HDB common room, 1,005.
Oh, okay. HDB master room?
Master is about 2,000.
Oh my goodness, look at this. Then
your master is in which location? Like
beside MRT lah.
Maybe like waterway terraces and all that.
Yeah, like that right. Sort of like paint like a very, very kind of like a
dangerous
and bullish kind
no,
of.
No, but it's true, man. It's true. I mean, if you go, of course, if you there are still calibrations, like, I mean, some landlords, no internet, no aircon, and stuff like that.
So, of course, like generally, like at this sort of max out pricing in terms of HDB room rentals, and of course, it means that, you know, like the owner has created in a way that will attract that kind of lifestyle and provide that kind of convenience. Sometimes maybe they throw in like maybe like weekly cleaning or like, you know, like they provide like proper aircon, proper furnishing that like, at least from an internal standpoint, the renovation looks more like a condo.
Correct.
And hence it can command that kind of more like premium pricing, like super fast speed internet. Stay with handsome
owners. This whole article here, right, is because of two reasons. The first reason is that exactly because of this kind of a rental kind of scare articles whereby this kind of a pricing is hitting all-time highs, right? These are the things that are letting landlord know that, hey, you should actually start to find a new tenant instead of renewing at the old price. We just concluded one rental place, Blossomville. Old tenant was paying about about 3,002. Blossomville is in between your Mayfair Modern, Mayfair Gardens there. 3,002 for a three-bedroom. Now we just rented out 6,003. It almost doubled. And then the second reason is that because of all these ABSD increases, all the ABSD increases, PRs now, they find it even more painful. Last time, they really had to pay foreigners, PRs, they really had to pay so much money for the taxes rate. Now they have to pay even more. So I think all these PRs and foreigners are going to end up renting again.
And I think, of course, like from the audience standpoint, number one, just to give a more like a balanced point of view, rationale why rental rates, let's say last year has increased like 30% averagely over the HDB and condo segment, that's because we have a huge, you know, like a spillover in terms of local demand because of their delay in terms of receiving their keys to their new launches, to their BTO. And of course, with the opening up of Singapore where we have a new foreigners come in to start working. So all these increased demand actually led to continued increase in terms of rental, which will start tapering off this year in terms of the growth rate, point one, because 38 projects condo projects were TOP this year. That is about like 17.5K of supply. Mm. So most of these owners, when they collect their keys, we've done our research, right? Only like about like 5% will sell within 1 year of TOP. So most are owner occupied. They will finish up the rental, and then this, most of this demand will not be replaced. Right, because they will be moving out. So hence, generally in terms of like the demand will taper off. And of course, with the new influx of condos, maybe there will be an additional amount of supply when people are renting out. So definitely, we will see that the growth rate will not be another 30% this year. It will be much lower. So we are like sort of like capping off, like tapering off.
Mm. Right. There's also going to be, I think the HDBs are completing as well this year, quite a number. So hopefully that kind of helps the market cool a little bit in the rental side.
So in summary, actually, what is your, to sum up this portion, what is your viewpoint on rental? Do you all think that it will come down by the end of this year? Like it will become more stable? Makila, what do you think?
My viewpoint is I hope it will.
How about Bing?
I think that it will start to... You sort of come to a standstill and then slowly taper because now the amount of supply is starting to meet the demand. A lot of condos are hitting TOPs.
Right.
A lot of landlords are becoming more aware because of maybe internet, because their ex-agents are sending them the past transacted data. So a lot of their supply is matching up to the demand. So because of that, I feel that it will slowly start to taper and then come down very slowly. But it will not hit back to the old lows. I think very difficult.
Because you have to reach I think we have already maxed on the new equilibrium in terms of of course, like this high rental rate, it must still be in accordance to, you know, like income as well for all these expatriates, right? If not, they will just think of alternatives. For example, they might go further away so that they can save on rent, or they might go to another segment, let's say like a HDB, etc. But generally, I would say that like, I think on a bigger picture standpoint, it also shows that actually it's important to sort of like own our own asset because end of the day is, just think about it. When interest rate goes up, people think that like it will push down pricing. Of course, we mentioned that total debt servicing ratio, our correlation in terms of affordability in Singapore versus other countries, the reduction is not the same. Hence, we are not seeing prices going to come down because of increased interest rates. Yes. And the other thing is, think of it is, when we have this high interest rate environment that we haven't seen for the last 15 years already, what happens in terms of spillover as well also correlate with an increase in rental to sort of like support this new increase in terms of the monthly installment. So I would say that generally, if you can own a good asset, you know how to do the proper selection, you have a proper hedge against inflation. Yep. It has a very good standing in your asset allocation throughout other instruments as well. So of course, it depends on how well you do in the other asset classes, right? Because if let's say a person is a saver mainly, so the real estate kind of returns can actually be like a striker for you. So like I always share a financial model with my clients is even at a 2.5% very misty kind of annualized return, right? Based on how you can reutilize the equity in the 5-year holding period with that 2.5% of annualized kind of appreciation on the property value,
right?
We are able to help you double up your property value every 5 years. And of course, when we show case studies of actual good examples of like our property selections, right, we can hit like 5-6% annualized return. And that will actually mean when you have 5-6% annualized return and you do a leverage based on 75% loan, the clients can actually get like a 20-23% compounded annual growth rate. It's like a compound interest kind of return on a yearly basis, right? So that is actually, in terms of that kind of returns, is, so I would say like, you know, like outperform, I would say like, quite a number of average performance, not asset classes. So we're not talking about like you are like a genius in like crypto or like you are like a super good in your own business. I think for the average person, I think like 15% kind of return is very good for like money to increase. Right. Yeah.
Thanks everyone for summing up the key fundamental benefit of owning a very good asset. Okay, so to sum up this episode, we'll talk about three things. We'll talk about rental, we just concluded.
Yep.
That very likely rental might taper off towards the end of the year. Secondly, it was that we talked about the fact of integrated developments. And of course, I think different reviews. And of course, there might be opportunity for resale integrated developments as well. But most of the time, as time passes and we look back, we'll realize that integrated projects, when they were at their launch phase, it seems like very affordable now. If we look at projects that were launched about 2-3 years back. But last but not least, to end off on the first part that we talked about, which was the ABSD increment. Let's have a look at this chart. and then we end of this episode. So we talked about the fact that condos apartment stock in the entire Singapore is about 355,000. Let's have a look at this green color bar. These are the amount of residential properties being owned by companies. And of course, within this data here, family offices. And if we look at the velocity of money coming in from foreigners and companies, the speed, and when we talk about velocity, we refer to speed, but we're also talking about the strength of the money. And I think that's one of the core reasons why government increased the ABSD by a doubling out approach. Because if they were to continue to allow that 5% of companies and foreigners to inject their capital into the OCR resale market, what is going to happen to the velocity of acceleration for OCR resale and new launches is going to be very different. And that might price a lot of Singaporeans out. Right. And if we look at this chart again, this also tells us another data, which is data point number 267750. These are properties being owned by foreigners and PRs. Mm. The rationale is that now, anybody that bought in the past, if I'm a foreign investor, I bought it at 30% ABSD or 15% or 20% ABSD, I will not sell my property now. Because if I were to sell, it doesn't make sense for me from an asset allocation point of view. I have to buy back a residential property at 60% ABSD. And thus, all the more, I wouldn't sell. Mm. If I were to look at this data, I can sort of conclude that this maybe 86,000 condos and apartments are sort of like stuck ready because these foreign investors, likely they are demotivated to sell. And thus, we are only looking at this 262,000 level of fluid stock.
Yes.
Yeah, which are being owned by Singaporeans. Because Singaporeans will sell, buy because they want to avoid the ABSD. Yes. They will switch it. And thus, I think, actually, my opinion is that we are vastly under supply.
Yeah.
And in the context right now, I think we're even trapped because 2 years later, 2025, if suddenly our government feel that, okay, I think price is more or less stable, let's remove the cooling measure, allow foreigners to come back and buy at 30% ABSD, then the money is going to flood back in.
Correct.
Prices are going to accelerate even faster. So I think actually now, it might be an opportunity. I don't know, yeah. Right? And what do y'all think? And then we end off this episode.
No, I think generally is that just think of cooling measures, right, as like additional handbrakes that are in place to make sure that the driver is safe, right? Mm-hmm. However, when your vehicle needs to accelerate, these handbrakes can be removed to make sure that there is still growth factor. So if we see from a balanced point of view, yes, cooling measures definitely have sort of like held back the amount of profitability you can have in the same period of time. But you can think of it, it helps to take away that kind of volatility to help to make sure that most of the people who are holding properties, whether is it for own stay, whether is it just for like a more simple kind of investor, right? It makes sure that this is such a much safer asset class for them. And if worse comes to worse, we can always remove some handbrakes to instantly increase demand to have certain form of price action that is beneficial for the entire market. So I think that's one of the conclusions. But I think we can show also some of the ABSD charts, you know, like that we have come with the webinars just to share with the audience how ABSD has impacted in terms of the property price index in the next quarter, as well as how the volume has changed.
Yeah, Ken. Michaela, what do you think? I mean, just to sum up for our audience on this thought process of ABSD.
The ABSD is there for the protection of Singaporeans.
Yes.
Yeah, it is to... a lot of people see it maybe perhaps quite negatively, but I see it in a way that they are trying to ensure that we're not priced out by the people who have the money to pump in. In their... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And overall, are you...
Am I for it?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying for it. I mean, in the sense that, do you think that we are sort of like trapped in this situation because like everybody is viewing Singapore as a safe haven? Mm. Do you think we are trapped? Because like the more you were to remove all these handbrakes, then everybody's going to flood back in.
Are we trapped?
Yeah.
Trapped as in because now...
we can't remove any cooling measures. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically, the government can remove it. perhaps when things are a little bit more tapered and like they see that things are controlled.
Right.
And if they seem to see a need for the market to move in a certain direction, perhaps they might do it again. I don't know.
So it's a psychology, right? Mm. Example, now you own 3 properties.
Mm.
Okay. You have intent to sell 2 of them.
Mm.
Tomorrow, you wake up, you open the papers. Suddenly, you see the headline. Government reduced ABSD for foreigners from 60 to 30 now. Mm. What would you do as a seller? Will you increase or decrease your price?
I would increase it.
Like, you'll increase your price, yeah, right? Yeah. Then if you are somebody that's waiting at the sideline, trying to time the market, will they end up buying higher?
No. I mean, they will have to buy higher.
Yeah, they will have to buy higher because you increase
your price.
They
wouldn't want to, but they would have to.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's really like from 2 sides of the coin. What do you think, Benyu?
Very, very challenging job for our government.
Yeah.
Because they need to keep the price affordable yet help people earn money. Because if people's properties don't earn money, then we're going to end up like country B.
Country A.
Country A or B, yeah.
So,
all right.
It's a very tough job by the government. But it's good. I'm for it. Especially for a non-property owner.
Mm.
I can't be working until 2 a.m. every day. Then after that, I realize that I cannot afford an RCR condo, right? That's very sad. Like.
Okay.
No, I think we need to have a balanced point of view, right? Mm. So number one is, just now we showed the chart. Yes, foreigners do participate at like a 30 to 40% level in terms of 30 to 40% of the percentage of purchase by foreigners are done in the OCR resale market for the past few years. But we have to relook at it that foreigners overall only take up 5 percentage points in terms of the volume of transactions.
Mm.
So number one, of course, by increasing this, we are reducing all this excess liquidity on coming in too fast, too quickly.
Yes.
That might have a spillover effect down the road, so that we sort of like want to put in a barrier, you know, like before, like, you know, like sort of like, you know, like all the threats come, right? Okay, not say threats. We have to put in like enough protection, right, to safeguard the interests of Singaporeans.
Mm.
And that's how we have ensured that we are one of the lowest bubble risk kind of rating.
Yes.
Because of our implementation cooling measures. End of the day, we want to let Singaporeans and our audience understand that actually the price action of Singapore properties, right, is purely mainly triggered by local demand. And because the savings rate has been so high, and that is why you can still see this kind of price action and this kind of demand in the private segment. And of course, from the cooling measure standpoint, we are in that current juncture because the whole world is sort of like in this situation where excess liquidity from so many rounds of printing money,
yep,
in the last like 13 years, and it is sort of like 回不去了, it's probably hard to reverse in that kind of situation,
yep,
as well.
Right. Thanks. All right. Great. And of course, the gold price has just shot up on 4th May. Yeah. I was hoping that Bitcoin will shoot up very soon. Yeah. We shall see. But of course, at this point of recording, First Republic Bank has just failed. There is the number 4th bank collapse for 2023 in US. Of course, we will have to look at what's going to happen to Fed interest rates as well. So we'll talk about all this stuff on the next episode. All right, so we hope that you enjoyed this Nuggets on the Go banter episode with us. And thanks, Bukele and Bengyu, for being here.
Woohoo!
Yep, we hope to see you on the next one. Take care.